95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. I hope you're having a nice weekend. It's not over yet. You've still got the whole day. Sometimes I get depressed on Sundays that the weekend is over and you kind of waste your day thinking that you have to go to work tomorrow. So don't do that today. Try to take the day, enjoy it. Yes, maybe you have to go back to work tomorrow, but at least enjoy your day off because it is another day off. So today's guest is the incoming director of the Doctor of Nursing Practice program at LaSalle University. She has a bachelor's degree in nursing, a master's degree in health services, and a PhD in nursing. She has an extremely impressive, extensive educational background, but that has nothing to do with why I wanted her to tell you her story. I didn't even know any of this until today. I contacted today's guest because she is a CASA. What's that, right? You're wondering, what the heck is that? Well, back in 2012, I personally became a foster parent. And after getting a better idea of how the foster system works, I realized that children in foster care need someone to look out for their best interest, speak on their behalf, someone to advocate for the child in the courtroom, because typically foster parents are not allowed in the courtroom, or at least that's how it used to be. I looked into something called CASA. CASA is Court-Appointed Special Advocates for Children. So that is why I invited today's guest in today. She is a CASA. Please welcome Dr. Jennifer Balot. Jen, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
So I really had no idea how impressive your education and your professional background was. You have all of these initials after your name. So you've got a PhD, an RN, MHSA, what's that?
So that's a master's in public health. My concentration is in policy and administration. So that's why my letters are a little bit different.
Okay. And then what's a CNE?
A CNE. I'm a certified nurse educator.
Okay.
Which means I know about nursing and I know how to teach it.
Okay. Did you go to school in Philadelphia?
No. I am from Michigan originally. So I got my bachelor's and master's degree at the University of Michigan. I'm a diehard fan. Go Blue, if there's any Wolverines listening. And I came to Philadelphia in 2002 to do my PhD in nursing at Penn and got stuck. And I'm here.
And you're here. This is where you made home.
This is where we made a nest. Absolutely.
Explain to me what you do at LaSalle.
At LaSalle, I am the director of what's called our Doctor of Nursing Practice program. So that's not a PhD in nursing. That's the quote unquote the other doctorate in nursing. And we call that a practice doctorate. So these are nurses who are typically nurse administrators or nurse practitioners coming back to get their doctorate. It's much more practically focused, less research focused.
And before LaSalle University, you worked at Newman and Jefferson University as well.
I sure did. I taught clinical at Newman while I was a doctoral student at Penn. Immediately after graduating, I like to say I crossed the river. I went over to Jefferson and taught there for 10 years and was the director of their Doctor of Nursing Practice program until September of this year.
And you just started working at LaSalle.
Yes, I did.
All right. And how do you like it so far?
I like it a lot.
Not only do you do all of that, but then you decide to advocate for children who are in the foster care system. Do you have your own children?
I sure do. I have two sons, Sage and Lior. And when they were 7 and 4, they were asking for a sister and couldn't really explain to them fully about how difficult that is to predict. And a series of twists and turns later, we got into foster care training with the kids, fostered to adopt my daughter from when she was 2 weeks old. She was finally adopted just shy of 2 years, and she is now 4 years old.
It takes a long time, right?
It takes a long time in the courts, particularly if a child comes to you with parental rights still attached, because parents have a series of steps that they are afforded to go through before they lose rights of their child. And that's important, too.
So you adopted your daughter. You said you got her. She came to you when she was 2 weeks. Was this through the Philadelphia system?
The City of Philadelphia foster care. Yep.
And do you live in Philadelphia?
Yes, I do.
Okay. When your daughter came to you, were her biological parents, were their rights terminated already?
Not at all. My daughter is the youngest of many children. And many children who have been adopted involuntarily terminated from her parents. So we knew that the chances were high that she would eventually have rights terminated and be up for adoption.
And that's what they then call the foster to adopt.
Correct. Though we didn't necessarily get into it with that as a requirement. So it worked out perfectly. And that's what took the longest, actually, was the termination of rights.
Sure. Yeah, that takes a really long time to do.
Yeah.
After you foster, you then adopt your daughter. When did you decide to become a CASA representative?
I honestly cannot remember how I heard about CASA. I know I had heard about it for years. I always say, even though I'm a nurse with this degree in public health, I really am a social worker in disguise. So I knew about CASA and somehow stumbled across the program in Philadelphia because there was not a CASA on our case with my daughter.
Oh, there was not?
There was not.
So does not every child get an advocate?
Not every child gets an advocate. We can talk in a bit about how that matching happens. So I stumbled across the website and actually, it was right before the adoption because I remember reading the criteria and thinking, oh, I want to jump right into this as soon as the adoption's final. And so I did send my application in. There is a, I don't want to say strenuous, but it's, you know, you have to put a lot of thought into the application and there's an interview because they are really very serious about the commitment that volunteers make to these kids. And then we do a 40-hour orientation. Then, boom, right away, I started picking up cases.
Well, and I would imagine that it's extensive. I mean, you're going into the courtroom, correct, to speak on the child's behalf?
Absolutely. So at the very minimum, what I do is I meet with each child on my cases once a month to check in with them, see how they're doing. You know, and it looks different depending on the age of the child. I do a lot of information gathering. I attend meetings as needed. If my child has, for example, an IEP meeting at school, a special ed meeting, something like that, I would go or I would call in just because that's considered a need of the child, their educational needs. And then when court comes around, approximately every 90 days, I write a court report and attend court. Sometimes I testify at the judge's request, sometimes I don't. But they have that information going in from me.
So yep. You don't always necessarily go in and speak in the courtroom, but you have prepared something that the judge is reading each time.
Correct. The judge and all of the lawyers, basically anybody on that case reads it ahead of time, not parents, the court personnel.
So are you in place of a guardian ad litem?
Oh, that's a question. That's a because that's different in every state. I'm not sure I could answer that
okay.
here.
Does Philadelphia have?
There is a system.
Mm-hmm. There is.
Yes, but it's not. Like I said, it looks different in every state. And in fact, my sister is a CASA in Utah, and they are called gals there. They're called guardian ad litems there.
I was also a foster parent, and we were in Bucks County, and the kids have guardian ad litems who are actual attorneys that are in the courtroom representing the child.
Correct. And I'm not an attorney. So that's part of the differentiation in Pennsylvania.
In the different counties.
Yeah.
So then you mentioned how a child gets matched with a CASA.
Okay, so I can speak very well to Philadelphia County. In Philadelphia, there are three different ways for a child to be represented by a lawyer in court if that child is in the system. The first way is through the Defenders Association. The Defenders Association would be assigned to them. They have a little social work unit that kind of meets with the kids and determines their needs and supports the lawyers in kind of their decision making moving through the case. Defenders Associations often conflicted out because if parents have had any previous association with the Defenders Association, they can't use them. The second way that a lot of people have heard about is called the Support Center for Child Advocates. And these are basically volunteer lawyers also being supported by a social work department. They're a great resource as well. But those numbers are very limited. The third way and the way most children in Philadelphia are represented in court is by private bar attorneys. So private bar attorneys are like you or me or somebody working for themselves. And they may represent mom on one case and dad on one case and the kid on another case. They are assigned by what we call the wheel of justice. But they are just what I said. They're working for themselves. So they don't have any social work backup. They don't have anyone to go meet with the kid. And they really, really don't meet with the kids. So that being said, we have a bunch of kids that have lawyers, but really have no contact with those lawyers. And it's really just a difficult, difficult way to move legal mechanisms forward if you don't even know who your client is.
Sure. Or you're finding out the day you walk into court.
The hour before you walk into court,
yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a file folder.
Yep.
So what we see is CASA, which is me, is judge appointed. And that's nationwide. It has to be appointed by a judge. Often what the judge will do is they see a case that looks relatively complicated or that they want another voice on or what have you, and it's being represented by a private bar attorney. So they will request a CASA at that point.
So the private bar attorney is representing who? The child?
The child.
Okay. So they still do have an attorney that's on their side that's working with them, but you're the person that's actually going into the home or meeting with the child.
Correct.
To really get a feel for how the child's doing either at home with parents or in a foster care home.
Yes. And we often see a lot of issues, well, in foster care in general, but, you know, kids with health problems. And the lawyer's not going to know that they have asthma and that I'm making this up. But, you know, if a kid has asthma and mom and dad are coming to visitation reeking of smoke, and that's aggravating their asthma. A kid who has educational issues, and the lawyer's not going to know their grades. That's all information that I can compile and pull together and say, here are what the needs are. Or my kid left their favorite green blanket at their last foster care placement. Can we find a way to get that to them? I mean, it can be minor, it can be major, but the point is somebody is making contact with that kid.
Is it major in that you're giving your opinion on whether or not the child should stay in foster care or go home to parents?
I have been asked, yes. I have been asked to testify. Occasionally I've been asked. That's not my role explicitly, but I can say, based on what I know, X, Y, and Z, this is what my thought would be. Yes.
Do you feel the judge takes what you have to say or what you have to write, the information you provide, into account?
Every judge is different, but since CASAs are court appointed, judge appointed, I really do feel like there's a healthy amount of respect there.
How long have you been at CASA?
I have been at CASA. I just had my 2-year anniversary. And the way CASA works is once you're appointed to a case, you're appointed for the life of the case. So I make that commitment when I take on a case that I am stuck with these kids until the case closes for whatever reason. So my very first case is rolling toward adoption in April, and I'm thrilled.
Oh,
I'm very
nice.
Excited.
Yeah, yes. That's so nice. I love when there's a happy ending.
Absolutely.
And a happy ending doesn't necessarily mean that the kids are being adopted. It
No.
might mean that they're going home to their biological parents. Their parents have cleaned up their act, got it together, and are now able to provide for the child.
Absolutely.
So you've been doing it for 2 years. How much of a time commitment is it?
Well, I'm kind of the wrong person to ask because I love it. And so I do it a lot. But a typical case, CASA is appointed to a family or a case. So you would typically get all of the children in that family. So it might be one child. It might be 6 children. If it's a bigger case, we often put more than one CASA volunteer on the case to kind of parcel it out a little bit. Like I said, a minimum, I meet with a child once a month. So that's about an hour that I see my kiddos, again, depending on age, because a 2-year-old is not going to entertain me for an hour.
And where do you meet them?
I meet them wherever is convenient. So I have a 14-year-old that is difficult to schedule because she's all over the place, and we usually meet at her after-school program. I have much younger children that are still in the home, not yet in daycare. I meet them there. Occasionally, I will observe a visitation with parents so I can get a feel for how that interaction works. Sometimes we go out to the park. I don't transport the children, but I go to where it's convenient for the child and foster parents.
How often are you in the courtroom? Do you go to court hearing?
Yes, I do. Each court hearing in Philadelphia is roughly every 90 days.
You go to each one, even if you're not expected to testify?
I do. Honestly, very rarely would they let me know ahead of time if I had to testify. It's usually when something comes up and there's a conflict between people testifying and they say, well, what does CASA know? And I will say, too, that CASA in Philadelphia sends a supervisor with every volunteer to the court hearings. So in the event that I'm not able to make it, my supervisor is familiar enough with the case and has my court report as well that she is absolutely able to take on that role.
How do you feel the work you do makes a difference in the child's life?
Tremendously. I can say that I was also a foster parent, and I would never knock that role. That's an amazing privilege to have, to be a foster parent. But I will say the way that the system is set up, the legal rights are not with the child and the legal rights are not with the foster parent. And it was often an uphill climb for me to advocate for my daughter. Everything from getting her insurance information to being able to go on vacation out of state, things like that. Not all of these are issues anymore. However, and I'm an advocate as a person. That's what I teach. It's what I do. And so it was always really hard for me to be a quiet person. So now I feel like I have legal standing to be an advocate. And it's phenomenal to be able to work for what the best interests of this child are and to work to do the very best I can for this child. These children, I have many.
I would agree with that. And I was a foster parent back in 2012. I became a foster parent. I'm no longer now at this point. But yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I was in the same situation. I found it very difficult to advocate for the child that I was raising, the child that was in my home, the child whose best interests I knew. The system made it very hard for the foster parents to express what was best for the child. We went to every court hearing, just same thing like you, in case they had any questions. But we saw a lot of kids and a lot of families come through where kids shouldn't be going back, and they were, and then they're taken back out of the home again, you know, because they went back prematurely or, you know, shouldn't have been going back
right
into the home. So with any of your cases, if a child is then reunited with the parents but is then taken back out and put back in foster care, is that still your case, or does that open up as a new case and they might have a different CASA?
It all depends on the case. Yeah. So if the case was formally closed, you're right. Then it might go to a new CASA or it might go to a new team. Although when a case is closed, we lose any legal standing to follow up with that child. It would be initiated on behalf of the child. My older kids all have my phone number if they need to call me, if they feel unsafe, particularly when they're moving to new placements or having difficulties. But, you know, my younger ones don't. So we do worry about that.
So once their case is closed, then you don't really have much contact with them.
Correct.
So do the older ones call you?
One of them has.
Okay. And have you been able to help?
Yes.
So they'll call you if there's some sort of problem.
Absolutely.
And you'll try to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I looked into CASA. I thought there's got to be an advocate. There's got to be people out there. There's got to be an organization out there that helps these kids when they go into court, whether they're teenagers or they're younger. You know, I was looking more for the or thinking more of the younger kids, but they need somebody to go in there and say, this is right or this is wrong or whatever it is, you know, make sure that it really is in the best interest of the child, because that's what everyone says, but that's not always what happens.
And that's absolutely true. I mean, I have an exercise I do when I speak about this with my CASA supervisor. We've done some presentations, and what comes out to people when you do this visual exercise in the end is really that judge is so isolated and the lawyers are so isolated from the kid and from everything the kid is going through. But those are the two people who are making the legal decisions. And that's something wrong procedurally with our system.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times the foster parents can't quite give their opinion because they don't want to be viewed as, or the court doesn't want to see them as, trying to keep this family apart. There certainly needs to be somebody that can speak on behalf of the children.
Right. And I'm considered an unbiased source. That I speak to parents, I speak to foster parents, I speak to kid, but kid's best interest is my job.
If you could give one bit of advice to our listeners today, anything at all, what would it be?
To not be afraid. I think there's a lot of people who are afraid of foster kids, are afraid of family court, are afraid of, quote unquote, kids who have been damaged or traumatized. But they're kids. They're just kids. What one of us can say that we haven't been traumatized by something? Don't be afraid to become involved in any aspect, even if it's attending a fundraiser or a 5K, or we need help in all aspects, whether or not you go knee deep and become a CASA or you kind of observe us from the edge and support us. These kids need us.
Is CASA looking for more people?
Absolutely. So in Philadelphia, again, CASA is small, and we have, last I knew, the third largest child welfare system in the country. We have a lot of kids in care here. We have a high, high level of poverty in Philadelphia, which really is a domino effect in a lot of things. There are definitely more cases requesting a CASA than there are CASAs available. And always looking for new volunteers that are rigorous about their commitment to being a CASA, and always a backlog of cases.
So how would somebody go about starting the process?
So the website is www.casaphiladelphia.org. That's the easiest place to start, where you can get a real good handle on what a CASA does and what it looks like in Philadelphia. There's links there to the application process. As I mentioned, it's an initial application followed by an interview. And then four times a year, they do training, alternating times. It's a two-week training. It's just a couple hours a day. There's some take-home components. There's some in-court components. And then they run clearances and all the other good stuff. And at the end, you get sworn in, you get a great certificate, you get a high five, and they give you a case. So.
And there you are, advocating for children.
Yes.
It really is an amazing thing that you do. And I think we need more people like you in this community, in this city. So thank you for what you do. And thank you for coming by to tell us your story.
Thank you for having me.
If you're interested in becoming a CASA, or you'd like more information about the organization, you can go to CASAPhiladelphia.org. And I encourage that you do so. I strongly believe that there are children in this community that need help. They need somebody to speak on their behalf and to advocate for them, because the situations that they're being placed in aren't always in their best interest, and they are not always safe. So we need more people like Dr. Jen to help with this and to help these children who need us. Thanks so much for joining me today and joining me on all of the episodes that we have here on Her Story. If you know somebody who you think would be a good fit for Her Story, please email me, herstory@957benfm.com. I'm Kathy Romano. Enjoy your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.